So a couple of weeks ago, we started that conversation, 2 weeks ago, where Jesus was teaching about the tricky nature of relationships when someone messes up, when someone does wrong, and it gets messy, doesn't it? But the problem is it's all about relationship. To God, it's all about relationship. He made us for relationship with him and with each other. And when something messes up, the gospel is that God restoring our relationship despite our sins. And he wants us to do the same with each other. He wants restoration between each other. So we had a conversation where Jesus taught about this. And then last week we went a little deeper. And I want to remind you that the goal is always restoration. That's why he does what he does, restoration. And we gave you a little definition, a little formula for restoration last week. We said that restoration equals ownership plus forgiveness. That's what it is. Ownership plus forgiveness equals restoration. In other words, you can have ownership. You can take ownership if you mess up and they don't forgive you, but you can still take ownership. You can forgive someone who wrongs you. They don't take ownership. You can still forgive them. You could do one without the other, but you need both for restoration. Either one can come first. You can forgive someone before they take ownership, and you could actually help them take ownership. You can own something before you're forgiven, but both either can come first. Either can come exclusively, but both must happen for there to be restoration. And so last week he said, what does ownership look like? What does it mean to take ownership when we mess up? Well, ownership looks like this. It looks like honesty, empathy, no excuses, no expectations. Honesty about what I did, empathy that what I did caused harm, and I acknowledge the difficulty of what I did and how that caused challenge to them and hurt to them. I empathize. No excuses. I own what I did. No expectations. I'm not here to demand forgiveness or that you get over it. I understand it's a process, and I'm just sorry. That's ownership. Now, that was last week, and then we, and by the way, I want to say this to you. We were reviewing real fast here because there's a lot of ground to cover today. If you missed either of those, they are online at our website, Facebook, YouTube. Find them because those are big topics. We also said last week, what does forgiveness mean? And forgiveness can be defined both in transactional terms or relational terms. Transactionally, Jesus once said, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. That's a transactional idea. But it's also relational, so a relational definition could go like this. That forgiveness is choosing to move from where we are now to where we can be. Where we are now to where we can be. Because if someone messed up, you're not in a good spot right now. We don't want to stay there. So we want to move from where we are now to where we can be, and that's forgiveness. Now, I said last week, oftentimes where we can be is where we used to be. That's wonderful. That's always the idea. But sometimes, depending on the kind of wrong that was committed and the kind of nature of the relationship, sometimes it can't go back to where it was. That just happens. I can give you several examples of when that is the case. But that does not mean it should stay where it is now, messy and dead and ugly. It should always go as far as it can. How healthy can we be? What kind of relationship can we have? We want to go from where we are now to everything that this relationship can be in this situation. And that's forgiveness. Now, I want to get into today's conversation. Some of us struggle with forgiveness because we understand that forgiveness is more costly than ownership, isn't it? Ownership, you're supposed to make it right. You messed up. But I didn't mess up. Why do I have to take part in doing the hard stuff? But as we've said, you know, it doesn't seem fair. Forgiveness means I got to bear your wrong. I want to make you pay for what you did. I want revenge, not forgiveness. And forgiveness is the opposite of that. It's what Jesus did for us. It's a restorative thing where he bore on the cross, as we'll celebrate this week, our wrongs so we don't have to. So we can have a relationship with them despite what we did. And that's hard. And forgiveness is always heavier and more costly. But here's the thing. Here's the thing we need to understand about forgiveness is it's not supposed to be fair. People say, well, it's not fair. It's not meant to be fair. Fair is not the point. The gospel is not fair. What Jesus on the cross was not fair. Every Sunday we come to church and sing about and praise God for good news that was not fair but benefited us. We're thankful for unfair. And so we're called to not just believe that and believe in Jesus, we're called to follow him down a path that is often unfair. But that's the point. And that's how restoration happens, through forgiveness as well as ownership. And so, here is what happens in the story. We left off 2 weeks ago. We talked about some verses where Jesus explained how to work with somebody who needs to take ownership if they don't and bring about restoration and forgiveness. Right where we left off on that sermon is where we pick up today. Matthew 18, 21, if you want to follow along. Matthew 18, 21, Jesus is talked about this restoration. And then Peter had a question. And by the way, leave it to Peter to have a question, right? Peter was always the disciple to say, I want to ask something. I want to say the quiet part out loud. And so Peter, it says in verse 21, then Peter came to him and said, asked, Lord, how often should I forgive someone who sins against me? Seven times? And I don't think Peter's referring to literally the number seven. He's like, someone wrongs me, I forgive them. Do I got to do it again? Like how many? Like, I don't know, seven times? Like a lot of times? And it's interesting that he asked that question because this taps into why forgiveness is hard. Forgiveness can be hard, especially in one of two scenarios. One scenario where it's hard is when the offense that was committed was a big one. You didn't just stub my toe, you really wronged me. When the wrong that was done is big, forgiveness is bigger, isn't it? And that's why I often say if you've been wronged in a significant way and you're really hurt, you should get some outside counsel about that. You should get some outside input. But make sure it's a Christ-centered Christian idea, because otherwise someone's going to give you a dumbed-down version of forgiveness that really isn't forgiveness at all. And it is complicated. And probably the bigger the wrong done to you, the bigger the forgiveness is. But you might need some input on that. You might need some wise counsel that's Christ-centered to help us see what that looks like in your situation. What if you came to me and told me your situation right now, I'd probably be like, man, I don't know how I'd forgive either. But I'm not teaching one-on-one. I'm talking to a group of people in person, online, a general principle. And the general principle is true. It just might need some particular nuance and application in your circumstance. So come get some help if that would help you. But the idea is that the big offenses can be forgiven. In fact, I've been amazed throughout my life to see somebody who forgives somebody for something that I can't imagine. I'm like, how did you forgive them? It's like, well, because of what God did for me. And I've seen forgiveness happen in amazing ways. But there's another kind of forgiveness that's hard to give. It's not always the big things. Sometimes it's the repetitive little things. The death by a thousand cuts, right? Like, you stubbed my toes once, I forgive you. You do it 18 times, come on now, you know? You neglect something once, okay, but you keep neglecting it. You said something that was unkind once, whatever. You keep saying it. And the idea is that if they keep coming back and owning it and wanting forgiveness, but keep falling back into a bad habit, keep falling into a bad pattern. Peter's like, how often do I got to forgive this person? Like seven times? Peter, by the way, was maybe one of the oldest of the disciples. Peter was married, maybe the only married disciple. He has a wife, he has in-laws. We've met some of them earlier. Maybe he's like, I understand relationships a little deeper maybe than some of his counterparts. He says, this is hard. How often do I got to do this, man? Seven times? And Jesus answers in verse 22. He says, no, not seven times. And Peter's like, thank you, because that was ridiculous, you know? I appreciate the past right there. She says, no, not seven times, Jesus replied, but 70 times seven times. Now, hold on, Jesus. That's not the direction I thought this was going. I thought you were going to say not seven times, maybe just two or three times. You know, that's where I was thought this was trending. I was ready for two or three if I had to. But you said not seven, but 70 times seven? That's like 490. Right? And for some of us, we look at that number and we're thinking, is that the number then? It's 490? It's not, that's not the number either. That's supposed to have a little bean counter in your, you're like, okay, you have messed up 14 times. You have 476 more to go before I have no longer got to forgive you. That's not what he's saying. He's saying that if you think seven times seems like a ridiculous number, it's way more than that. It's like Buzz Lightyear, right? To infinity and beyond. It's way more. It's not 490. And here's why. We better be glad because we're being taught to forgive the way that God forgives us. I sure hope God forgives us more than 490 times. Live long enough, that's a scary number. When we come to God in our daily prayer, you come to God in our daily prayer and say, Lord, forgive me today my daily bread and forgive my sins, as I forgive others. Well, what am I asking God to forgive me for? All what sins? All my sins. Bad attitude, bad thoughts, mean words, lazy behavior, neglect, you get 1,000 things, right? I've asked God to forgive me more than 490 times. I hope after a year and a half of doing that, he's not like, oh, you hit the threshold, no more for you. It's not about 490. It's about the fact that Peter was like, I got to keep doing this like, I don't know, 7 times. And Jesus is like, it's way more than that, Peter. It's way more. It's as often as someone needs it that we want to forgive. Whew, that's a challenge, isn't it? It's the death by 1,000 cuts version, or death by 490 cuts version of forgiveness. Oh, but Jesus says forgive. He knows it's hard, and so Jesus decides to tell a story at this point to his followers. And we're going to read the story together. Now, some of you are like, well, Arlen, do you have a 4-point outline about how to forgive? Because you gave a 4-point outline last week about what ownership looks like. Where's the 4 points of what forgiveness looks like? We don't have 4 points. Because here's the thing about forgiveness. It's a little different. Forgiveness is very seldom a head issue. It's more of a heart issue. We don't need a 4-point outline. We need to be stirred. And Jesus decides wisely to tell a story about forgiveness, hoping that the story will move our hearts. Let's read it together in verse 23. Jesus says, therefore, the kingdom of heaven can be compared to a king who decided to bring his accounts up to date with servants who had borrowed money from him. Now, that phrase can be compared as a reminder that when Jesus tells a parable or a story, he's using something from real life to illustrate something about the kingdom of heaven. It's not the same thing. Jesus is not the king in the story who had bad, the parallels get broken down. He's saying, I'm going to tell you a story that's different, but there's a truth from the story that can illustrate something about God. So the kingdom of heaven can be compared to a king, this fictional king, who decides to bring his accounts up to date with his servants who had borrowed money from him. Now think about that. Why is the king lending out money? Well, the king is probably rich. He's a king. He paid for by the generous taxes of the people of the land, right? I mean, he's got wealthy as a king. He has probably was already wealthy. People bring him gifts. And what do wealthy people tend to do with their money? They put it to work for them. They don't put it under a mattress somewhere to let it stay hidden. Wealthy people put their money to work. And so in the story today, the king has put his money to work. Maybe he bought some mutual funds and some ETFs on the New York Stock Exchange. Maybe he bought some real estate investments. And maybe he found some businesses that wanted to do young startups and wanted to invest into those. He's a venture capitalist or an angel investor. He's just diversifying his portfolio, looking for a good ROI. And as he's doing this with all of his income, he realizes, I need to pull some of it back. Why would someone pull back their investments? Because they're getting older, and you want to de-risk as you get older. Maybe he wants to make sure some money is back in the coffers again. Maybe pass it on to the next generation. So it's time to, maybe things have gotten a little tighter. He wants to start pulling back some of the money that he's lent out. And in verse number 24, it says that in the process, one of his debtors was brought in who owed him millions of dollars. Now, obviously, it's not millions. They weren't dollars back then when this was written. This is a modern translation putting it in terms that we understand dollars. But the equivalent of millions of dollars this man owed him. By the way, I don't know who that guy is, but he must have been a smooth talker. He had a real good pitch. Lend me some money, I'm going to do some good things with it. I mean, I don't know if it happened all at once or if he maybe borrowed some money and had to come back later and say, hey, it's struggling, but a little bit more investment will get us over the hump. Maybe over the course of a few loans, he is now millions of dollars in debt to this king, and the king is calling him on the money. Verse 25 says, he could not pay, so his master ordered that he be sold along with his wife, his children, and everything he owned to pay the debt. The word master is used here because he's the king, so he's the master that way, but also it's a reminder to the principal that the borrower is always the servant to the lender. And so he's in debt to this man. And his master says, I'm gonna have you sold into slavery. By the way, that seems terrible to us today because it is terrible, but it was more common in different times of history. I mean, before we have modern consumer protections that we have today, and bankruptcy laws. Throughout history, you could go to debtor's prison for owing debts, or you could, historically through the history of the world, be sold into slavery to work off your debts. That was very common. We don't see it as much today. Today, your loans are, of course, sometimes today, you can still get into some very stupid loans, right? Like if you can't find anyone else to borrow money from, Joey, you could go over and say, I know somebody who has a cousin named Vinny who will lend me some money, but if I don't pay it back, I'll lose two fingers, you know? There's still a possibility to get in trouble, but most of the time, our loans are safer and they're protected, but in those days, and in much through history, you could end up in slavery or prison quickly for debt. And this man is about to be sold with everything, his wife, his kids, everything. Because the man knows that he can't get millions of dollars back from sending this man into slavery. He doesn't need another servant himself, but he can get something by selling him into slavery. He has something for his wife, something for his children, and by selling his possessions. So the king's thinking, let me recover some of the money I've lost to this man. Well, it says in verse number 26, but the man fell down before his master and begged him, please, look at these words, please be patient with me. And I will pay it all. Can you picture the scenario in this moment as the king is there and the man just falls down on his knees? He's like, oh, please, please, don't do this. I beg you, just give me some more time, a little more time. Hold on. Why is he so desperate? He's desperate the way we're all desperate. I mean, who wants to be in slavery? Especially this man. He was a mover and a shaker. He was an entrepreneur. He had big plans. He was a businessman. Now he's going to be a slave. He was a man who the king trusted with money. I mean, he was somebody. Now he's going to be a slave the rest of his life. Not just him, his wife and kids. I mean, you know how it is when you want to provide for your family and you feel like you may have failed or let them down. It's a terrible feeling. But in this case, they're not only going to be let down, they'll be enslaved themselves. And he's desperate. He's thinking, I don't want to see my wife and kids every day in slavery with me, knowing it's my fault that they're stuck there. Or worse yet, they're sold somewhere else. I never see them again, but I know somewhere they're suffering because of my decisions. He's horrified, he's desperate, and he begs, oh, please, please, I just need a little more time. Just give me a little more time. I'll get the money. Please don't do this. He's desperate. In verse 27, it says, then his master was filled with pity for him. He watched the scene and he said, man, that's terrible. I can't do this to this guy. It says, and he released him and he forgave his debt. Now, folks, that's an amazing statement. It does not say he was filled with pity for him, so he gave him 2 more years. He had 2 more years to come up with the money. He had 5 more years. Give you a little bit more time, work hard, make it back. No, he releases him, and he forgives the debt. That means the guy doesn't owe him. The man who came in the story didn't even ask. He didn't even ask for that. He just asked for a little more time. He was begging for more time, and the king said, I'm going to forgive the whole debt. You owe me nothing. That's remarkable. I think the king realized something here. The king realized that money wasn't coming back. That money was not coming back, Ben. Because if someone owes him, if he gave the guy millions of dollars and he squandered it all to nothing, he ain't going to turn nothing into millions of dollars in 2 years. The money's gone. It's a lost cause to hope to get that money back. There's 2 options. I can make you pay or I can forgive it. And the king decided, why say 2 more years? We'll be here, right here again in 2 years. I'm just gonna forgive the debt. I'm just gonna take it away. That, my friends, is a picture of the gospel. That's a picture of what Jesus did for us. He forgave the debt because again, just like in the story, there's nothing we can do with our debt. We're like, well, God, I know I've made some mistakes, but if you give me a little more time, just a little more time, I'll make my good outweigh my bad. But it doesn't work that way, does it? Because no matter what we do, we still have the debt of what we've done. We know this with each other. We know this with each other. When someone wrongs us, you can't take back what you've said or what you've done. What's been said and done is said and done. And no matter how much time you try to make up for it, that was still said and done, and it can't be undone. At some point, forgiveness is when you say, we can't erase what happened. I'm just gonna forgive it. And that's what Jesus did on the cross for us. And here's the good start. The good picture is that he's pictured by a king who forgave not just little debts, but millions of dollars. And here's what I wanna point out. If you're here today and you're thinking, well, I believe that God forgives debts for small ones, but Arlen, not me, I've messed up too bad. My debt with God is too big. You don't know what I've done, where I've been. It's too much. I wanna give you some good news. God does indeed forgive the biggest of debts. That's the gospel. That's what we celebrate this week. He paid it all. We used to sing a song when I was a child. I won't try to sing it for you. But the chorus said, Christ paid a debt he did not owe. I owed a debt I could not pay. I needed someone to wash my sins away. And now I sing a brand new song, Amazing Grace, all day long. For Jesus paid the debt that I could never pay. That's the gospel pictured right here. And if the story ended here, we could go home and say, hey, that's a good story. It ended well. I mean, not for the king. The king lost millions of dollars, but hey, at least he forgave the guy. Pretty good story, as much as it can be for most people, except for the forgiver. Sorry. But yeah, that's a good story. It's the gospel. Yay. But the story does not end here. Look at the next verse, verse 28. But when the man who was forgiven, but when the man left the king, he went to a fellow servant who owed him a few thousand dollars. Now, that's still a lot of money. Right? Still a lot. And he wants his money, because even though he's off the hook, he probably could use the cash for other things. And he finds someone who owes him a few thousand dollars. And it says this, he grabbed him by the throat and he demanded instant payment. Now, hold on now. Why are you so mad? You just got off the hook for millions. Maybe he's mad because he was on the hook for millions. He was almost in trouble, and he blames himself for his bad decisions. He blames other people who owed him money. But he's mad, and he grabs the man and says, pay me, instant payment. Venmo me right now, right? Apple Cash, I don't care. Get it to me now. And look at the response in the next verse. It says that his fellow servant fell down before him and begged for a little more time. Be patient with me, and I will pay it, he pleaded. This man, he knows he's in trouble for his thousands of dollars. He falls down again and says, oh, please, just give me more time. I just need a little more time. Just give me one more shot. I've got a plan. I can come up with the money. Just please, don't hurt me. And you'd think that the man standing there watching him beg, you think that man in that moment might say to himself, that looks familiar. Where have I seen that before? Oh yeah, that was me a few minutes ago. I know what it's like to be desperate. I know what it's like to have no hope. I know what it's like to have done something that you cannot undo, no matter how much you wish you could. I know what it's like to be in a situation where there's a hole that you're in and the person you owe, you're at their mercy. I know desperation, and I also know what it feels like to be so graciously forgiven. I know what to do here, right? But that's not what he does. In verse number 30, it says, but his creditor would not wait. He had the man arrested and put in prison until the debt could be paid in full. He says, no, sir. Straight to jail with you. You're going away right now until every last penny is paid off. Paid in full means I want every last penny, and you won't get out a day early until you owe me. Everything you owe me is paid off. I read that and you read that, and not one of us likes this guy in the story. All of us are like, what's wrong with him? How does he compartmentalize what he just experienced in being forgiven for so much and compartmentalize it away from what someone else needs from him? Is he just that able to just separate those two concepts? Or is he just so a monster, like so selfish, so me? I want this when it benefits me, but not you. It's like, what's the disconnect? But Jesus is telling the story in a brilliant way, because everyone in his audience then and everyone in this audience today can relate to this, if we're honest. That we know what it's like to at some point experience the forgiveness and grace of God and then to struggle to pass it to somebody else. And if we're not careful, it becomes always about me. Grace for me, but not for thee. Mercy for me, but not for thee. Forgiveness for me, but not for thee. Compassion for me, but not for thee. Because it's about me. I want it when I don't deserve it, but how dare you ask me something that I should not have to give you? You don't deserve it. And it's unfair to ask this of me, but I'll gladly take the benefits of his unfairness when it benefits me. It's easy to do. Every time we don't forgive is kind of what we're doing. We're saying, In fact, I'm going to tell you this. I'm just going to share this with you. I've been 27 and a half years a pastor. And over the years, it used to shock me. I don't see it often, but I see it from time to time. It shocks me less than it used to, although I can't say it doesn't. But I can tell you through the years, even as a young 25-year-old kid preacher, I can't tell you how many times I saw somebody who could stand up and they could champion the message of grace. They would talk about it, grace, mercy, compassion, God's goodness and his love and forgiveness and everything. Those are things they could sing about it on stage, play an instrument with songs about it. They could lead a small group about it. They could be a vocal person in the church seats or in their church, on social media and passing around books and quotes. And I'm like, wow, that person really understands the gospel. They love the grace of God. They love the forgiveness of God. They're all about it. I'm impressed. And then all of a sudden something happens to them. Or to someone that they care about. And there's none of that. The hardness and you'll pay for that and everything but the things they've been championing. I'm like, where's the disconnect? But isn't it so easy for us to say, well, I believe this. The message we celebrate isn't only supposed to be for our benefit. It's a way of life. It's the Jesus way that we give to others to show his love. But we don't want to. I shouldn't have to. It's unfair, I know. But you know, when you look at this guy in the story, say, dude, if the $1,000 of debt and the million, you came out ahead, buddy. You were forgiven for millions. You had to let go for thousands. You came out ahead. But he's sitting there saying, well, what if I can come out, be forgiven for millions and still get my thousands back? Right? That's what we do. The truth is that whatever is unfair about forgiveness, we have benefited from God. We have come out ahead in this unfair competition. But sometimes we want it both ways. We want to get the benefit of forgiveness, but still not have to give it because we want to get paid back. And so what happens? Verse 31. When some of the other servants saw this, they were very upset. I mean, we're upset reading the story. They went to the king and they told him everything that had happened. Then the king called in the man he had forgiven and said, you evil servant. That is evil, by the way. Evil is always about me, how it benefits me, who cares about anyone else but me. You evil servant. I think in modern terms, he's like, dude, that is messed up. He says, I forgave you that tremendous debt because you pleaded with me. Shouldn't you have mercy on your fellow servant just as I had mercy on you? Notice those words, just as. I bolded them on the screen because I want you to remember them for later. Shouldn't you, who have been given such tremendous mercy, show mercy to your fellow servant just as I had mercy on you? Shouldn't that benefit for you benefit somebody else? Shouldn't that grace that you've been bathing in wash somebody else? Where does this end? Why does it end with you? And it says in verse 34, then the angry king sent the man to prison to be tortured until he had paid his entire debt. There's a lot going on there. Like, oh, is this what I'm about? Torture, what's torture? Well, torture, by the way, is another word for torment. It's oftentimes translated torment. It's not that he was being sent to, you know, some sick facility to be waterboarded or some weird thing. He's referring to the fact that when you're put in prison, you are in torment. You've lost your freedom. You've lost everything. You're living a life with no freedom. It's torment. It's torture. And he said, the king sent this man to prison. He was going to sell him into slavery, but he forgave the debt. But now he says, I'm going to send you to prison. But why is he sending him to prison? Because he owed him millions of dollars? No. He was willing to forgive the millions of dollars. He's sending him to prison because the man refused to do for somebody else what he had done for him. And says, they're going to prison. By the way, the same thing you were going to do to him. I'm not going to sell you into slavery with your wife and kids, but you were going to put that man in prison until he paid you every last penny of your debt. Okay, that's how you want to play the game? I told you before, God tells us you pick the rules. That's how you want to play the game? Okay, then to prison until you pay the whole debt. That's powerful. And it brings us to the closing statement of Jesus from this story. Verse 35, he says, that's what my heavenly Father will do to you if you refuse to forgive your brothers and sisters from your heart. We're like, oh, that's what he'll do to us? Ooh, what does he mean? Is he referring to hell? Don't read into things that Jesus is not saying here. Again, the first debt was forgiven. The big debt was forgiven from selling the man into slavery. This is a reminder that while Jesus took care of our sin debt, he expects us to be close to him, but doing the same for others. We saw this in the model prayer, that while Heavenly Father isn't going to disown you, you will not be, your mom and dad, you know what it's like to be upset with your kids and say, you're in trouble, you're in trouble, you're in trouble. Or we're not having fun right now. We'll be close when we get this thing figured out, when we address this problem. And your Heavenly Father says, I expect you to do this, or we're not okay. What did we say several weeks ago? We can't be wrong towards people and right with God. We can't be wrong towards people and right with God. We have to understand these things go together. And so he says, look, if you don't forgive your brothers and sisters from your heart, that's the key. The word there is heart. Because isn't it always a heart battle to forgive? That's why he gives us a story instead of a formula. Because it's a heart issue. And if we don't forgive, our hearts get hardened and they get bitter. We've all seen it, haven't we? Maybe we've experienced it, or we've seen it near us, or we've done it ourselves. When someone doesn't forgive somebody else, they become hardened. And what happens when you get hard and unforgiving is the next time someone offends you, it's a natural to become hard there too. And next thing you know, someone's life is littered, the landscape of their life is littered with people everywhere that they are not forgiving. And you get around someone like that, and you get to know someone like that, and when you talk to them and they tell you about this terrible person who's terribly wronged them, and you listen, you're thinking, oh, that person is terrible. When you tell me about it, they are terrible. But then you start listening and realizing there's a lot of people in their life that's terrible. And then you start to wonder, how soon will I be terrible? If I walk on eggshells with this person and I'm always fun, they're fun too. But if you ever messed up, watch out, because there's a hardness there. And Jesus, you got it from your heart. This is a heart issue. But they don't deserve to be off the hook, I know. But it's affecting you. That's why the story said a minute ago, the man was imprisoned to be tormented until he paid his debt. Think about this. Not in prison for his millions of dollars he owed. He was imprisoned for his lack of forgiveness for somebody else's debt. We get a little secret here. When we don't forgive other people from our heart, we are imprisoned like the man in the story. And we are tormented. And I know people who have been unforgiving and said, I don't care if it makes me hard and what prickly. I don't care. I'd rather feel that way than let them off the hook ever. And you can do that, but then you are a prisoner like the man. You're a prisoner and tormented by your unforgiveness. And you know when you get out? When you pay the debt. What, my millions of dollars? No. The debt you owed to forgive others the way that God's forgiven you. When we pay that debt, we're free from prison. Forgiveness is setting the prisoner free and realizing that you are the one who's been set free. Not just you. It's not get me out without them. It's saying I set them free and realized the door that opened the freedom for them opened freedom for me. It's powerful. It's a powerful truth. Paul the Apostle, several years or maybe a couple decades after Jesus told the story, and of course he died and rose again, Paul the Apostle would plant churches everywhere in the name of Jesus and write letters back to them. And Paul wrote a letter to the church in the city of Ephesus. And in that letter, he brings up this subject so plainly as a callback. Ephesians 4, verse 32, he says this. He says, be kind to each other. But they don't deserve kindness. I know, but be kind anyway. We don't deserve kindness, and yet God is kind to us. Be kind to each other, tender-hearted. There's that word, tender-hearted. Remember what he said earlier? Forgive from your hearts. Because if we don't stay tender-hearted, we become hard-hearted, and we become imprisoned and tormented by our own debt of not giving others what God has given us. So be kind to each other, be tender-hearted, and forgiving one another. And notice the words next, just as God through Christ has forgiven you. And Paul uses that same little phrase, just as, to call us back to what Jesus once taught in the story that we just read, that we are to forgive each other just as God has forgiven us. And that leads me to my closing idea. I'm going to give you two sentences on the screen in a moment. These two statements go together, and they are a way to help you and me forgive others when it's hard to forgive them. And I'm not saying it's ever easy. That's why I said, if you got a big problem with somebody, that's understandable. If I heard you, I'd agree with you. But you should talk to somebody one-on-one who can help you figure out the nuance of what this does look like, because it looks like something. But it might need application that's specific to your circumstance. But it still is forgiveness. It just might need explanation. But talk to somebody. And again, you see, but Arlen, they did not take ownership of what they've done. Well, if they don't take ownership of what they've done, then you won't have restoration, because restoration is ownership plus forgiveness. If they won't own what they've done, then the restoration will be hard. Some of you are waiting for ownership from the other person, and you may never get it. And that's why the relationship is not restored to where it used to be. You can't control that part, but you can still forgive. You can forgive in such a way that if they ever do take ownership, life can move forward. You can do your part. And when it's hard to do because the offense is in our face, and when someone offends us, it's right in our face, isn't it? It's so hard to see past it. Here's two sentences that give us a way to apply forgiveness. It goes like this. Give the forgiveness that you've been given, and give the forgiveness that you want to get. That's what we do. You got to get away from the intensity of the moment and the frustration, the consumeness, and sit back and say, hold on now, what do? I can give the forgiveness I've been given, or I can give the forgiveness that I want to get. Let's talk about both of those real quick and we'll be done. Forgiveness I've been given. What you do is you say, man, this bothers me. This shouldn't have happened. That person was wrong. Hold on now. Instead of thinking what I want to do and the limited definition of forgiveness I want to give them because I'm really mad at them, I'm going to step back and say, what's the definition of forgiveness that God has given me? When God forgave me, what did that look like? I've experienced God's forgiveness. How did that feel? What was that definition that I haven't benefited from forgiveness? That's the definition that God's given me when I was forgiven. I'm going to give the forgiveness that I've been given. Not even just God. Some of you have experienced forgiveness from each other. Someone else wrong, you've been wrong with someone else in the past and you were hoping they'd forgive you, and maybe they have, and you're like, oh, I'm so glad they forgave me. What did that look like? What that forgiveness looks like for you is what you should give to somebody else. Because it's hard. Miguel, if you offend me and I'm not in a good spot, I might look at you and say, Mike, I might look at you and say, I can't forgive that, or I want to change the rules of what forgiving you means. But if I can look at what forgiveness has meant when God gave it to me, and others have given it to me, and say, that's my template, I can give the forgiveness I've been given. What we can't do is what the man in the story did. Have one definition of how I receive it and change it to how I give it. Give the forgiveness that you've been given. The second tool is just as good. Give the forgiveness that you want to get. As God has forgiven me for my sins, but he's my heavenly Father, I'm his child, but I want him to be close, I want him to be happy with me, I want him to be blessing my life, I want to be right with him. When I mess up, and by the way, we will. When I mess up in the future and I need God to forgive me, what do I hope that looks like? What do I hope that any future forgiveness that I need from God will look like? What's the forgiveness that I'm going to want to get when I need it? That's what I should give. What's the forgiveness that I want from others? If I mess up with my relationships and I make a mistake, what do I hope someone else will do to forgive me? Well, that's the forgiveness I ought to give. And so, instead of sitting there saying, you wronged me, and I'm going to decide in my hurt of what forgiveness does and does not mean and look like for you, I'm going to end up in a very bad spot if I do that. I'm going to step away, and I'm going to say, I'm going to figure out what forgiveness looks like for them based upon what it looks like for me. I'm going to give the forgiveness that I've been given, because that's what I received. And I'm going to give the forgiveness that I hope to get when I need it next time. I'm going to have separate definitions. You get what I've been given. You get what I hope to get. Either of those things changes the game. Either one of those things brings clarity. I know what it looks like when I needed it. I know what I hope it looks like when I do need it. That's how I forgive you. That formula changes the game if you want it to. Because God, who made us for relationship, knows that relationships get messed up because people mess up. And to make that relationship restored, to have restoration, there must be ownership and there must be forgiveness. We talked about ownership last week. Today, here is as close as I can give you of a plan on how to apply forgiveness. If we can just do what God has done for us, the world would be a better place. And you're like, Arlen, it's hard. I know. I know. But here, hear me out. The cross was hard. The gospel's hard. We are called not just to believe in Jesus. We are called, we are asked to follow him. To follow him. The world is a better place when Christian people live the Jesus way, even when it's hard. And so I call you today to turn to the Lord and ask him to help us take up our cross daily and deny ourselves and follow him.